CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CGM's Handy Link. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, David Charchalis will be telling us a little bit about his epilepsy work. So what's the latest with the epilepsy work that you folks have been engaged in?
Well, lately this summer we've had our children's Sunny Days Camp programs running both here in the Mississauga area and in the Kitchener-Cambridge-Waterloo area. So this is the second year that we've done it up in that region, and this is like our 10th year we've had it down here in the Mississauga area.
So
a lot of... Sorry?
No, go ahead.
Now, like I say, it's a great camp for kids who are diagnosed with epilepsy. And the one good thing about our camp is that we don't limit it just to the child with epilepsy. It's open to their brothers and sisters, their siblings, to attend also. We've got to make it like a family type of thing for the kids, so that they all learn. The siblings learn. The child with epilepsy learns, can see other children having seizures, begins to understand it, we explain it. It's a very educational and fun-filled time.
So, can you tell me a little bit about some of the benefits that these kids have by being around others with the same condition?
Oh, absolutely, man. The biggest benefit is that when a child has a seizure, or anybody has a seizure, they don't see it. They don't know what it looks like. Unless mom and dad tape or videotape it, right? So when the kids are there, and one of the children has a seizure, the other children get to see what it looks like, what happens. The best thing I ever, I'll give you an example. One child had a seizure, this went back years ago. Young little girl says, "Hey, Dave, is that what I look like when I have a seizure?" And I said, "Yeah, you have the same type of seizures that he does." And he goes, "Wow, Donnie at school told me I look like a fish flopping out of water." And I said, "Well, is that what it looks like?" And she goes, "No." So I said, "And then you explain it." She learned what her seizures look like. So she can sort of defend herself if she has a seizure in school and people talk to her about it. She knows. The sisters, the brothers, they learn how to do seizure first aid response. They learn to put their sibling in the recovery position to time it. It's a great educational piece, like I said before. It's just amazing to watch and to see the kids learn and understand what their disease is about.
So, how do you reach out to those who could potentially benefit by being at the camp or from any of the programs that you offer?
How do I reach out?
Yes.
We do a lot on Facebook is a big one for us. We do reach out to some of the neurologist office. And let them know we have a Sunny Days Camp program coming up. There are some mom and some other groups on Facebook that deal with it. We will put it out there. There are special other camps that work with kids who have various illnesses, diseases, conditions. We put it out to them that we've got this camp coming on. It's specialized for epilepsy. So as opposed to being a camp for all diseases, like all issues, all concerns, ours is specific to epilepsy. If some of the children have a dual diagnosis, they're more than welcome also. We don't limit it to strictly not to have epilepsy. It helps. But if they have a dual diagnosis, they're more than welcome. We open the doors to everybody. And I just, you know, I will not turn away a kid from coming to this camp, ever.
So I'd imagine that having all the kids together, as you mentioned, siblings and friends and all, that it helps clear up some of the myths or misperceptions they might have about epilepsy as a condition, just by seeing it for what it really is.
Absolutely. I mean, even when we go out on a, take the kids out on a trip, and once a week, I don't just take them to the water park like some camps do. I take them out to Medieval Times. I take them out to the Wet and Wild Water Kingdom. We do big trips for the kids to the ROM. The biggest, if a child has a seizure during that point in time, the general public sees what's happening. And then my counselors are dealing with the child having the seizure, the rest of the kids, and usually one, if we have the availability, are explaining to the public what's happening. You know, and so again, it turns, it's a sad way to do it, but it turns into an education piece for the public also. You know, I've had adults have a seizure at various awareness events. You know, and it just happens. You can't control when you have a seizure. It just happens. And it turns into a learning piece, and it's an awareness piece, and people start to understand. That's one of our prime goals, is to get the word out to the public. Make them understand what epilepsy is. It's not contagious. You cannot catch it. You know, it can be hereditary. You know, it's just our way of getting out there and saying, hey, listen, we're here. This is what it is.
So, in your time promoting awareness and with the society, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Actually, yeah. I'll go back to our kids' camp. I had one child, young girl, and she had brought her siblings. Apparently, every weekend, mom would go outside with the kids, dad would have breakfast. They would switch off. Dad goes outside with the kids, mom has breakfast. Well, one Saturday, I guess something happened that they didn't get the kids got outside. The young girl had a seizure. The two siblings were on top of her, putting her in recovery position, one time again. Mom and dad were freaking out. The kids said, don't worry, we got it. And they said, okay, she's coming out. And they went through the whole thing. Mom and dad were flabbergasted. They came and talked to us. They said, hey, listen, this is like your first time for us, and we can't be more thankful to you guys and your counselors. And that's the first time in years that they were actually moving forward. They were able to actually sit down together and have a breakfast on a weekend. With our camp, another young girl was very, didn't speak a lot. She was very quiet, very withdrawn. And after a couple of weeks in our camp, she became a lot more outgoing. Even the mom called and said, what are you doing with my children, my kid? I said, what do you mean? She's talking. She actually has conversations at the dinner table. She was telling all about her day camp. So again, it's seeing what happens. It's being amongst the kids who have the same diagnosis. Nobody's making fun of you. The other kids all have the same issues. They all have the same concerns. They all have the same care. It's just a fantastic way to have the children grow, become more confident, become empowered with their epilepsy, and not be afraid of it.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me here.
Of course. In this segment of our show, Marilyn Abbs will be telling us about the South Niagara Canoe Club. So, can you tell me a little bit about the parent work at the canoe club?
Currently, the parent canoe team at SNCC is comprised of myself and one other athlete, Lindsay Davis. We would have a third. Unfortunately, she had foot surgery, so she's taking this year off. So that's our current lineup for this year. So far, we have we've done not too bad. I had a bit of a an off time one event, so I didn't participate. But my teammate did very well, and we're looking forward to our next event, which is the provincial championships being held here in Welland next weekend on Saturday and Sunday, with the para events being held on Saturday.
So, do you use any modified equipment in your rowing?
Actually, for our paddling, yes, we do. We actually have kayaks that can be equipped with stabilizers for people who are challenged with any balance issues, even when sitting in the kayak, because these are sprint kayaks. These are not your mill-of-the-run or run-of-the-mill kayaks that you would get from Canadian Tire. These are sprint kayaks meant for racing. So they're much tippier than the Canadian Tire kayaks that you see everybody scooting around on and having fun. The stabilizers themselves, we've actually worked with a designer who is up in Sudbury with Simon River Sports, Mr. Gergay Lancy, and he's created a new style that is more aerodynamic in terms of how it cuts through the water as opposed to plows through the water. So you don't really lose much in terms of any drag or forward speed because of the shape. So that's just a new thing this year. Additionally, the other boat that is in paracanoe racing is called a Vaha, which in its origins is based on a Tahitian outrigger canoe. So you have what would look like similar to a canoe style body with an outrigger stabilizer on one side. Initially, it was only just one side you could have the outrigger attached to, but fortunately for paracanoe, you can have it attached either on the left or the right side based on the preference or need of the paddler to be able to race the boat.
So, I'm curious, what are some of the benefits for a para-athlete being able to be out there paddling on the water?
The major benefit is being outdoors rather than stuck inside. That's the obvious. The other part is being part of a group that, whether you have able-bodied members or para members, your club is literally your second family, in that you spend event weekends with them, whether it's local or whether it's across the country, like we're doing this year for the Canadian Nationals, which are being held in Dartmouth the weekend before Labor Day. So we have had athletes that have represented our club across the world. That is one of our junior men who has participated at the U23 and as well as the Olympic hopes level. He has been our world-class person so far. To date, we haven't quite made the world stage yet for qualifying to participate at the para level, but we're certainly not for a lack of trying.
So, you tell me a little bit about the training that the para team does to try to qualify for the world stage.
For the worlds, it would be very intensive. It's literally a year-round commitment to making sure that you're going to the gym as regularly as you can, especially during the off-season, which is usually from December until April. Sometimes you can be on the water sooner than that, but it depends on what the conditions are locally where your club is, or if you're doing any training outside of Ontario, as there are training camps that are held in Florida throughout the wintertime, usually in February and March. And then sometimes you have the ability to go to training camps that are not only in Florida, but in other parts of the U.S. This past year, there was a training camp that was in, I believe it was California. Aside from that, your on-water time, when it's appropriate for people to be out where it's safe, you know, where the water is actually flowing, as opposed to frozen, you have to make sure that you're out as often as you can be. So if that's 2 times a week on the water, 3 times a week on the water, potentially more, it's really down to weather conditions and what the process is and where you're at for your training, because it takes time to build up your progression as to what you're trying to achieve with your training. So you're looking for making sure that you're hitting all of your targets for improving your adaptability to conditions, your forward speed, trying to achieve new personal bests for your own training, and trying to see where you are in relationship to other paddlers that you would be comparative to, not only of Canada, but also at the world level, because ultimately you need to be 8% of gold medal time of Paralympic standard in order to really be considered someone that Team Canada is going to take the investment of time, effort, money for training, etc., and take you to worlds if you happen to be fast enough after achieving all of those things that you've done in your training.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Come to Ottawa Street to visit Café Amour and Art. Café Amour and Art is adorned with colorful murals, Latin American decor, and local art that evokes happiness and positive energy. While our specialty lies in exceptional coffee, we also offer a delectable selection of food and desserts. Moreover, there's always something fun and exciting happening at Café Amour and Art, such as art exhibits, live music, painting workshops, dance classes, captivating storytelling sessions, and traditional celebrations. Each day, we strive to make your experience at Café Amour and Art a delightful highlight of your day. Visit the shop and make yourself at home. You are going to love it. Café Amour and Art, where your senses come around.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, David Charchalis told us a little bit about his epilepsy work, and Marilyn Abbs told us about the South Niagara Canoe Club. In this segment of our show, Leon Mills will be telling us about the Canadian Hard of Hearing Society. So what can you tell me about the society and your work?
Well, our official name is Canadian Hard of Hearing Association, Newfoundland and Labrador. We were originally called, when we were originally formed in 1984, we were the Newfoundland Hearing Society, but then our name changed over the years several times, and then when the province changed its name to add Labrador, so we had to, everybody had to sort of put on that extension to their name, right? So where we have this long name now, Canadian Hard of Hearing Association, Newfoundland Labrador. So basically what we are the provincial chapter of the Canadian Hard of Hearing Association. And we are the only organization in Newfoundland Labrador that provides, you know, non-medical supports for people living with hearing loss. And we, like I said, we've been in existence since 1986. And, you know, we currently operate in Mount Pearl, which is Newfoundland, which is the sister city to St. John's, Newfoundland, right next door to each other. But we're central to the St. John's metro region. And so we provide, you know, supports both in person, online, on the phone, virtual, whatever, to people all across Newfoundland, Labrador.
So what are some of the most common supports provided for those with hearing loss?
Yeah. Well, with us, it's, like I said, we don't sell hearing aids, right? We are not medical. That's provided by, like, hearing aid dealers and the public health system kind of thing. What we do is we provide the things like they don't provide, the primarily of which, I guess, the most important being education, about, you know, your hearing loss, what you can and can't do about it, what kind of hearing options you might have available, whether it's hearing aids, cochlear implants, other assistive hearing technology that works with or without your hearing aids, you know, safety devices for people with hearing loss. And we do, you know, screening testing, which is a little bit different from full diagnostics. We just get a pass or fail, so we can go on and get more professional testing. And we loan assistive hearing technology for people. We sell hearing assistive technology, and we provide scholarships. We provide a program for hearing youth. We provide bursaries for them for attend university. So we have a whole bunch of different programs and services that we offer for people with hearing loss. And if people would like to know more about our association, you can check out our website, which is www.chha-nlca. And that will give you a more in-depth, you know, overview of the different kinds of programs and services that we offer.
So I'm curious, when you mentioned that you do education, do you ever encounter any myths or misperceptions about hearing loss?
Oh, yes, sure. A lot of people sort of think, if you haven't lived with hearing loss, people just sort of think, well, you know, get a set of hearing aids and your hearing is going to be fixed, you know. That's a myth. It's like eyeglasses, you know, unlike eyeglasses, if you put on eyeglasses, if they're cut for you properly and other things are fine, then you'll hear, you know, very well, you can see very well. But with hearing aids, they're an aid to hearing while you wear them. And how somebody responds to those is unique to the individual, because there's so many different factors and different kinds of hearing loss that, you know, not everybody's going to respond to wearing hearing aids in the same way. So they don't, the primary myth is that, you know, hearing aids fix your hearing, but they don't. While you wear them, they are an aid. Like myself, for example, I've worn hearing aids for 38 years. If I took off my hearing aids now, I would be functionally deaf. I would not even hear your voice. So, you know, for me, I do extremely well. And other people could wear it with the same kind of hearing loss that I got to the same degree for the same amount of time. They would wear hearing aids, and they may not hear half as well for some other different reasons. So some which may be medical, some which may not be medical. So there's a whole lot of different things involved when it comes to hearing and good communication.
So in your time with CHHA, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Yeah, I'm one of them. I was in university, my fourth year university, studying to be a teacher, and we're, you know, particularly important to communicate and hear well. And one day, I was Friday afternoon, I was sitting in class, and just like you're flicking off a switch on a wall for the lights, I went from hearing to completely deaf. And I was deaf for 3 weeks, and then one morning, I heard some sounds, I was home. I had to give up school that summer. I was at my apartment, and I could hear some sounds. I realized the television was on, but I couldn't understand it. So I went back, got more testing. They said, yes, the good news is you have some, you know, degree of hearing now. So hearing aids, we think, will be helpful. And as soon as I got them, I could again hear very well. So we've had quite a few success stories, you know, of people over the years who've had success with hearing aids. In fact, one of the common comments we hear from clients that we help is that, you know, gee, I wish I'd known about you guys sooner, or I wish I'd done something else to get hearing aids sooner, because I didn't realize how much I was missing. And just for information, Cameron, like a lot of people with hearing loss, the usual amount of time between hearing loss being identified and them getting help is 7 years, believe it or not, so, which is kind of crazy. But a lot of people, you know, there's a stigma attached to hearing loss. A lot of people are very embarrassed about it. They try to hide it. I don't know why. People don't try to hide wearing glasses. In fact, people wear fake glasses to try to look cool. So, you know, but it's just a stigma that exists for a lot of people. Guys are less willing to get help than women, I guess. I don't know if that's a macho thing or not, but, you know, people with hearing loss who don't get help for it, they're missing out on an awful lot. And it's really unfortunate because for most people, there's no need to do that. Hearing aids will help most people if you get the right fit, the right kind that meets your needs, your hearing loss, and you're educated on how to adapt and get used to them successfully, which often doesn't happen, unfortunately.
So do you have any advice for those out there who might be asking, can I get help, or is there something I can do about this?
Yeah, sure. Like I said, the worst thing you can do is do nothing. And lots of recent studies are showing that there's a lot of consequences of hearing loss for your physical health, your mental health, your social well-being, because you're withdrawing from people and the things that you normally do because of communication difficulties. And more recent studies are showing there's a strong link now between hearing loss and dementia when you get older, which is really unfortunate. And the longer you go with untreated hearing loss, the more severe the dementia. So, you know, if you have hearing loss, the best thing to do is the best advice I can give you, anyone, is to seek help immediately and get something done about it. Like, first thing to do is get educated. Unlike when I first lost my hearing, the internet didn't exist. But nowadays, the internet exists. There's all kinds of information available on the internet about hearing loss and what you can do about it. And also seek out a group like ours, wherever you live, you know, and there's different groups available in Ontario. I believe you have the Canadian Hearing Society, which sort of does the kind of work we do. There might be a couple of smaller groups like we do, but there's no provincial chapter of CHA in Ontario. But there are some, I believe, a smaller group at the capital region. So anyway, but you know, like I said, go online and get the information or connect with a local hearing aid dealer, something like that. And don't be afraid to ask questions. Try different dealers and see what the prices are, compare the prices, you know. You don't buy the first car from the first car lot you go on to. So, you know, we encourage people to compare pricing for hearing aids as well because they're not all the same, you know. So, but the best thing to do is to seek advice, get information, and educate yourself and do something about it. The worst thing you can do is to do nothing.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
During David's interview, he shared the story of his kids being able to provide support while one was having epileptic seizures. Truth is, we might not be as familiar with the condition till it affects someone we know and care about. But honestly, being aware that such conditions are out there can not only broaden our own knowledge base, it can literally be a lifesaver. But the fact is, this is not something they have control over, it's not something they're faking, and it is something that requires all of us to be at our best to provide support. For the moment may come at any time when one of us is asked to be there for someone with a disability. And we ourselves may find ourselves in that position, asking for that support, which is oh so critical to help us be at our best. The truth is, it can be a very simple thing in some cases, holding a door open for someone with a mobility impairment. The truth is, no matter how you provide support, it's just giving a person with a disability of any kind the opportunity to live and to be at their best. The fact is, if we were in that situation, I know, speaking for myself, I'd want someone to give me the right supports. And this is something we can all prepare ourselves to do. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me, you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.